Recording in progress.
Good morning. The date is March 30th, 2023, and the time is 9:39 a.m. I'm calling for the regular quarterly meeting of the Board of Directors of the Texas Property and Casualty Insurance Guarantee Association, which is being held as an in-person and telephone conference call meeting conducted in accordance with Section 462.059 of the Texas Insurance Code. After the meeting, an audio recording of the open sessions of the meeting will be posted on TV6's website. Currently, 7 of the 8 board members are in attendance, 1 by telephone, 6 in person, and the 8th, Tiffany Reiner, is in Austin, is en route from the airport to this meeting. And at this time, I'd like to ask anyone who's calling in, if you would please mute your phones unless you're speaking. I think it will help with the audio of this meeting. Chief of City Staff in attendance is John D'Amato, Tatiana Bermudez, Annette Evans, Stephanie Mendoza, and Gary Vieira. We're also joined by Shelby Betts, TPSIG is outside general counsel and interim executive director. Also in attendance are the following staff from the Texas Department of Insurance: Caitlin Bain, Dan Pascal, Ryan Rewey, Jessica Barda, Jeff Jones, Tina Arendahl, and Vane Hugo. Did I miss anyone? Nobody else has called in, correct? We will move on to item number one, and I'd like to remind everybody that we do have industry members on the Board of Directors who are competitors in the marketplace. Therefore, we must have cost care from any discussions that might give rise to an allegation of a violation of state or federal antitrust law. Please speak up if you think we are wandering into those prohibited discussions. Item 2 on the agenda is the review and approval of the corrected summary of the official minutes of the November 30th, 2022 special meeting and the summary of the official minutes of the December 14th, 2022 regular meeting of the board. Do I have a motion?
Motion to approve the minutes.
Steve Flynn.
November 30th and December 14th.
We have a motion by Steve Flynn. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
David Nardecki has seconds. Are there any questions, any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition or abstentions? Hearing none, the motion carries unanimously. Today, we are going to take a few items out of order so that we can properly introduce our newest industry board member, Ty Simmons, and to allow Director Garrett, who's out of town, to participate in both of our executive sessions before he needs to leave the meeting. It also helps with not having to call in and out to different numbers for efficiency purposes. And for the record, Tiffany Reiner has joined us this morning.
Hi, Garrett.
Next, we're going to move on to item number 5, which is the nominating committee. Mike, the intent here was just to provide an update on the open industry position, which has been filled. Do you want to report on that and introduce Ty and let him just do a brief self-introduction to the board and our guest?
He dropped.
Okay, I'll take over for
a
So basically, we really appreciate Caitlin and the TDI team for their work on getting us a good new industry board member. And I guess last week, you were notified that the commissioner, the TDI, have approved your election to the board, and you're serving out Michelle Ballard's unexpired term.
Yes.
Okay, so if you just tell us a little bit about your background, so we can get to know you better.
Absolutely. First, thank you to Caitlin and the rest of TDI for getting that pushed through so quickly. So my name is Kai Simmons. I'm general counsel for the Standard Insurance Group. We're an operating unit of W.R. Berkley Corporation, which is a holding company. I'm actually employed by Berkley Insurance Company, which is an independent carrier in Texas, so that's why I'm qualified for the board. I've been at Union Standard for 14 years now. Prior to that, I was with the Republic Group, which is now part of AmTrust. I was there for 10 years. And then prior to that, I was in private practice for 5 years. I do a little bit of everything. Probably about half my work is managing bad faith cases. I work with the claims department, and the other half is compliance, product development, records support, contracts. I'm going to say I'm a jack of all trades. I'm basically an attorney of one. I do have a staff, but we were only one attorney in the legal department, so we're a relatively small operating unit. I am on the board of JPA, the Texas Medical Liability Association, APAC, so I have a little bit of experience with boards, but I understand there's a lot, probably more action going on at this board, so I'm really excited to get involved. I know you guys have a lot of work that you do, and it is an honor to be on the board, so thank you very much for accepting me. So excited to be here.
Okay, we're going to now move on to item number 6, which is an update from the Human Resources Committee. First, I want to report on the status of the request for proposals to engage in employee compensation and benefit consulting. The request for proposal, or RFP, was sent to 8 entities to solicit their proposals for us to consider. The due date for all the proposals is tomorrow at 5 p.m. The Human Resources Committee will meet in early April to make a recommendation to the board on a firm to engage to conduct the study. And we anticipate having a special board meeting in late April to select the firm. The consulting engagement agreement should be executed by May 1. And a final report with recommendations and findings will be sent to the Human Resources Committee by June 19th. And there will be a presentation to the board, hopefully at the June quarterly board meeting. We did have an RFP that some of these dates are a little fluid. And so, but that's generally the expectation for how that will enroll. Does anybody have any questions about that? All right. Then we will move on to the filling the vacant executive director position and the replacement of interim executive director. You know, as we discussed at the special board meeting last week, the board used numerous avenues to solicit qualified applicants for the executive director position, including outreach to industry contacts, former Texas Department of Insurance contacts, trade associations, and the National Conference of Insurance Guarantee Funds. We had 47 individuals apply for the position. The Human Resources Committee reviewed the resumes and initially narrowed down the field to the top 6 applicants for an interview. The field was then narrowed to the top 3 applicants, and the Human Resources Committee and other board members interviewed the top candidates. Following the March 23rd special board meeting, the Human Resources Committee reached out to the top finalists and began negotiations, which are ongoing. We do anticipate having an announcement.
Can anybody hear?
Hello?
I can hear.
This is Mike.
Y'all,
I can hear you. Oh, okay.
I can hear in the meeting.
Yeah,
I didn't mean it.
I've texted Joe Betsy. I'm called.
Yeah, I can't hear anything from the conference call. Just dial-in participants, they're loud and clear.
Okay, so y'all can you hear me now?
Barely. Barely.
Question, could we maybe call it? Because it's 784 calling me, it's all folks.
Where are you?
No.
You're
back.
No, it's
put us on your, can you put us on your cell phone?
Yeah, that's what we're trying to figure out. It's just we've got like 5 or 6 people that have called in. And so let us pause for a minute and we'll try to.
It's myself and two from TDI and we can't hear anything.
So what about the phone?
You can use that desk.
We've got Polycom.
Recording stopped.
Okay, we are back from a brief break to work on our audio settings. While we're doing that, I'll go ahead and ask, well, everybody who's on the phone, if you would mute your phones unless you're speaking. And then were y'all able to hear the update from the Human Resources Committee that I just made? Okay, we'll redo that. All right. Basically, the first item is agenda item number six. The first item is an update on the request for proposal to engage an employee compensation and benefits consultant, or an RFP. The RFP, the due date for the proposals is March 31st, tomorrow at 5 p.m. The Human Resources Committee will meet in early April to make a recommendation to the board on a firm to engage to conduct the study. And we anticipate having a special board meeting in late April to select the firm. The consulting engagement agreement should be executed by May 1st. And a final report with recommendations and findings will be sent to the Human Resources Committee by June 19th. And we anticipate a presentation to the board at the June quarterly board meeting. In the RFP, we did give a caveat that some of the deadlines may be fluid, but that's the general timeline we're anticipating following. Does anybody have any questions about the RFP? All right. The next item is filling the vacant executive director position and the replacement of the interim executive director. And as we discussed at the special board meeting last week, the board used numerous avenues to solicit applicants for the executive director position, including outreach to industry contacts, former Texas Department of Insurance contacts, trade associations, and the National Conference of Insurance Guarantee Funds. We had 47 applicants for the position. The Human Resources Committee reviewed the resumes and initially narrowed down the field to the top six applicants for interviews.
Actually, we did eight. There were eight.
Oh, we did add two.
We started with six.
And we added two more. That's correct. Thank you for that correction. So there were initially the HRC conducted eight interviews. The field was then narrowed to the top three applicants, and the Human Resources Committee and other board members interviewed the top candidates. Following the March 23rd special board meeting, the Human Resources Committee reached out to the top finalists and began negotiations on employment terms and compensation and benefits, which those are ongoing, and we hope to have an announcement in the next week to 2 weeks on that front. So stay tuned. We will have that wrapped up soon. Are there any questions on that item right now? All right. So the time is now 9:57 a.m. and is authorized by Section 551.079 of the Texas Government Code. The board will adjourn into closed executive session to consider the Texas Department of Insurance Office of Supervisory Interventions Oversight Report regarding troubled and insolvent property and casualty insurers. Immediately following the closed executive session with the Texas Department of Insurance, the board will adjourn into closed executive session to discuss and deliberate on personnel matters as authorized by Section 551.074 of the Texas Government Code and to consult with the General Counsel and receive legal advice as necessary on issues arising out of the Texas Open Meetings Act and any agenda items as authorized by Section 551.071 of the Texas Government Code. So the time is now 12:24, and we are back in a session. Next, we're going to take up item 9, consideration and possible action on matters discussed in executive session. Do I have a motion related to the matters discussed in executive session?
Yes, and I have a couple for you. The first motion is to authorize the HRC to negotiate consistent with the parameters discussed in the executive session with our proposed candidate for the executive director position.
And there's a motion by Director Reiner. Is there a second?
Second.
Director Holt, seconds. Are there any questions, any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposition, abstention? Hearing none, the motion carries unanimously. Next.
The next motion is to authorize the HRC committee in recognition of Shelby Betts and her service to the organization as the interim executive director to pay out compensation as discussed during our executive session today.
All right, we have a motion by Director Reiner. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Director Holt. Are there any questions, any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition, abstention? Hearing none, the motion carries unanimously.
Well, I'd just like to comment, that's the best motion I've heard during my tenure. I like to thank the committee. It's been an honor to serve in both capacities of general counsel and interim executive director, and this gesture is very much appreciated. And I know that I'm happy that the board is on the cusp of landing a very talented permanent executive director. And so this is a propitious time for me to start redirecting some energy to some other clients so that I can, in an orderly and smooth fashion, achieve full retirement by the end of this year.
And I like the big word.
Yeah, that's good. I could look that way. But thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Words cannot tell you how much we appreciate what you get.
Exactly.
All right. I believe, Director Flynn, do you have a motion?
I do. In light of Shelby Betts' retirement from TPC, I move that for the limited period beginning April 1st, 2023, and lasting until the new permanent executive director for TP SIGA starts, board authorize director Mark T to serve as interim executive director. In this capacity, he shall manage TP SIGA's top directors and manager, which are Jenna Mano and Ned Evans, Gary Barrera, and Tatiana Bermudez. Yay. And provide guidance to them regarding the discharge of their responsibilities as necessary. Accept service of process for TP SIGA and be authorized to delegate this duty to Annette Evans when Mr. Mark T is not in the TP SIGA office. Participate in TP SIGA's Claims Appeal Committee in lieu of the Executive Director, and 4, take any responsibility necessary or appropriate action designed to further the effective and efficient operations of TP SIGA, which such action will be promptly reported to the board. If Mark T, last point, is unable to serve, the board authorizes Joe Benson-Norton to serve as interim executive director and perform the duties described above.
You've heard Director Flynn's motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Director Mardekia. Are there any questions, any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition or abstention? Hearing none, the motion carries unanimously. Next, we'll move on back to item 4, which is the Executive Committee. The first item is legislation amending the Guarantee Act, pending the state legislature. We discussed this item at the March 23rd special board meeting and hope to have an update for the board early next week. The next one is drafts of board members' business and ethics and conflicts of interest questionnaire and employee work product and confidential information policy. Due to time constraints and the addition of a new member on the board, we are postponing action on this item until the next board meeting in June. Next up is item 7, the Claims Committee. Martin?
Okay, I'll just give a couple highlights and then not to yet. So we did increase our claim count in the fourth quarter slightly, but overall, from the end of the year 2022 to the end of the year, we did decrease our total claim count by about 500 claims. The biggest thing that we dealt with in 2022 was unearned premium payments. We had over 46,000 UEP payments in 2022 for a total of $45 million in UEP payments. Staffing-wise, we did increase from the third to the fourth quarter from 75 to 85, and that was with the addition of the independent adjusters for FedNat and the Weston insolvencies. And with that, we did get a new insolvency since our last board meeting, and that was UPC. And so Annette will be giving an update on this new insolvency that went effective in February. So with that, I'm going to hand it off to Annette.
Okay, and then we'll come sit over here, just so that you guys have that screen in your hand. So thanks, Mark. You gave most of the update for the quarter and the year where we ended everything. Big year for unearned premium refunds. I don't think we've had a time, I've talked to some of the long-term TPC employees where we had 24,000, 25,000, 26,000 UEP payments back to back to back. So that's been a lot, and we're gearing up for UPCs, which I'll talk about a little bit. I think Mark, like I said, Mark went over everything. Litigation is slowly going down. We started with 24,64, and then we're at 23,96. Closing 276. All of the big ones that came in with ACCC, the big count, is slowly closing. We're trying to affect settlements on those where we can. Very rarely do they go to court. They're $30,000 maximum policy. So, you know, not a good one to get experts on and spend all this defense money on. So we're trying to settle those out. We talked a little bit about, maybe talked about the UEPs and what we pay mid-year again. Recoveries, we recovered about $1.3 million in net worth subrogation deductible in 2022, and that continues to go down year to year because we don't have as many net worth recoveries out there to collect from. They only are basically on workers' comp claims we haven't had, and then workers' comp consultancy. So it'll continue to go down, not good. That we don't get another one this time. The other big piece is the cost containment, which for the new board members, again, is, you know, we get medical bills in from workers' comp, and we have a department that makes sure we get usual and customary reduction on them, any kind of PPO reductions, fee reductions on. So we were billed a total of $24 million last year. Only paid $6.4 million. $24 million. Only paid $6.4 million, which saved us 74% in amount billed. So that department really does a great job in making sure we're saved and paid again. And then as far as individual insolvencies, there's probably four big ones that we're following up on right now. ACCC I always still include because we ended up with 9,000 claims in it. We've got almost 3,000 left, and probably 2,000 of those are in litigation. So we'll keep our eye on that one. The other one we received in April 2022, Lighthouse, and that was a property one out of Louisiana. We ended up with about 1,400 claims. We have about 600 left. That was our first big unearned premium one. We paid over 21,000 UDP claims for $21.5 million.
And then Weston came on in August of 2022. That's the property that's obviously out of Florida. And we've about 1,100, 1,200 claims on that one. We got a little bit over 1,000 left. But we paid almost 27,000 UDP claims on that one for $25.6 million. NFN Net came along, Federated National Insurance came along the next month in September 2022. That one, fortunately, didn't have a lot of earned premium, only 2,000, almost 2,100, and we paid $500,000 in return premiums on that one. We have almost 1,000 claims on that one. They're still coming in every day. Reopens and newly reported claims are coming in every day on that. And then the final one that Mark discussed was United Property and Casualty Insurance that we just got February 2023. They told us to expect 800 claims, so far we're almost at 1,000. We've only gotten the initial records on them. We haven't gotten the kind of the meat of the claims yet, so we haven't been able to actively handle the majority of the claims, although they have been sending us some hardship claims, newly reported claims, so we have been able to try to take care of people who have an immediate need, those who are out of their homes or otherwise need something immediately. So I'm probably expecting double the amount or 2.5 times what they told us to expect. Because the property companies usually pay the initial portion of the loss and then they close the claim and wait for someone to request their depreciation check and then it pops open again. So expecting a lot more than that. And they had 27,611 open policies when they went insolvent. Some of them, a small amount would close between the 30 days. The policy cancellation, they could just pay. So the receiver has started the process of calculating the refunds. Generally, it takes them maybe 30 days to get us those records so we can start paying the unearned premiums. I know, TDI will probably be contacted about it, so just trying to keep them in the loop as well. We were notified that they had a backlog of cancellation requests that UPC had stopped processing a while ago, so they're going to have to do those cancellations somewhere in there first and then send us the records, otherwise there would be supplemental payments due and the like. So maybe 30, 60 days before, but we're geared up here at TPC to handle them. John and Gary's department both have some ownership in that. We, are in check stock and envelopes and making sure that everything can print as when we start getting those records in. So that's what we have right now. Doug, knock wood. Maybe we'll get a reprieve before we get another one. There's no way of telling ever. We have conversations with the guaranteed fund community and the market in Florida isn't as stable as they'd like to see. So, who knows what will happen for the rest of the year. All we can do is to be prepared for it. Any questions about claims? Yes, sir.
You might want to let Ty know how many receiverships we've had since Annette Evans arrived 2 years ago.
Yeah, so I was here 2 years ago in December, and the previous director promised me a receivership a month. So he was actively trying to say, I'm going to give you one a month. I just want to be generous. But he almost accomplished that. I think we had maybe 8 the first year I was here, and then so far, we're at 13. The 2 years I've been here, and I think the 2 or 3 years before that, they might have had one or two, or a lot of small ones that didn't add to much. But yeah, we've had 13 pretty sizable ones, if not in claims, and in unearned premiums. So,
thank you.
We've been busy. We love you, keep busy.
We appreciate the work you and your team did.
Any other questions? All right.
Thank you.
All right. The next item is item number 8, Finance and Audit Committee.
All right. All right. So you're going to check out computer there. So, Donna and I will go on through this.
I got a book bunch in here today. The first item is our status on Thomas Howell Ferguson, who are our new auditors. So they have completed their on-site work. John has met with them. I have met with them. We discussed that at our FAC meeting 2 weeks ago. You know, the only thing that was brought up to me in the initial discussion I had with them was some potential issues with signatures. Wasn't really a huge finding or anything, but they just wanted to bring it to our attention, and we'll have more information for us. The plan for next steps is they will be at our board of directors meeting for second quarter to present out their official findings. John, I don't know if you've heard anything in the last 2 weeks from them.
I have actually, and the great news is Shelby completed her legal letter, and financial statements and AUP are about to be released.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Make a note of that.
Unfortunately, it went to Madeline's spam, and I just, you know, she didn't call me. And
who's Madeline?
Madeline Reddick.
Oh, he did. Wow.
So, at any rate, and then it sounds really good that these are new auditors. You know, the association had been using Plant Moran, and my letter explained where litigation is handled within the organization, which is not typical, really. I'm the general counsel, but all of the litigation that Annette was talking about is handled either. It's handled by a stable of outside law firms. It's also managed, I guess, by claims personnel and by the one in-house lawyer at TPC, Amber Walker. So I think Amber subsequently contacted me and go, "Oh, well, this is the first time I've ever been contacted." At any rate, I'm glad it got all resolved. But I also heard that looks like going to be an unqualified or clean opinion.
Thank you. All right, so Gary, we'll talk about our technology updates.
Okay. I'll come up here and see if you guys want to turn around. Thank you very much, Tiffany. This is going to be really quick. For updates this time around, kind of excited. We are moving to Integrity Data's HR system, or we intend to anyway, from our Dynamics platform, which didn't fully function the way we needed. So I know Tatiana worked a lot with conversion. We finally finished the conversion. So that data has been moved over, and now we're doing our final testing, which we hope to have completed next month or so. So that's really good news. That moved over very well. And then secondly, catch Ty up a little bit, Ty. We are in the process of looking at an alternative system for our CAP system, which is our claims management system in-house. Recent activity that we've seen over the years, this application created way back in the day, just can't handle it anymore. It's really kind of chugging along. So we've created a team to kind of go out there and look at alternatives. We've seen two so far, two very good alternatives so far. But we saw a third one, and this is the one we're going to see next month. It's Spare Claims by Spare Technologies, a group out of Denver, I believe. So we will see that system middle of next month, and then add that to the group, and then report back to the board as you know to what our recommendations are.
John, that's what the other two systems you're looking at?
The other one is we have an option. We have a program, a contract program out of Denver that does work for us on the current system. So one option is to have him redesign it and rewrite it in-house. Okay, gives us a lot of flexibility in how what we can select, right? We can tailor to what we need. And then secondly is a system called Claims Express by Insurity. Mm-hmm. It's one of these, you know, off-the-shelf kind of, you know, it does everything, you know, but you know, makes you breakfast, it does everything. I mean, it's really, really good. But I mean, it comes with the cost, right? So we've seen that one too. So we kind of have two ends of the spectrum, so this one's going to be kind of in the middle. I mean, I kind of think it's going to be exciting. So.
We surveyed the other DRT associations to see what pipe system they're using.
Absolutely. At the NCIGS conference, there is about six or seven smaller guarantee associations using Clinical Express. So that's why we kind of, that kind of turned us on to them. So yeah, that was an option. And actually one of the users in that group, Tiffany, is the one who said, you may want to look at the spare claims because we saw them also and they were very impressive. So that's what we're taking a look at. Okay. Thank you very much. And then lastly, thirdly, this one's a little techie, and I'm techie, and I get excited when these things happen, but we had an update to our firewall recently, and a significant upgrade. And I'm not going to go through what was done, but really, for security reasons, the upgrade now looks at the handshake. We've got a handshake, right? When two devices start talking together, handshake. That was a point of intrusion possibilities by attackers. And now that fix is now looking at that handshake now. So we've actually put nice levels of security now. Again, I know that's technical, but I get excited. I got talking about things. And then I'll just want to mention the last one. I think it's important to know that what it's doing now is tracking all administrative activities on our firewall, which is a good thing. Because we want to make sure that if it's not internally we have a problem with administration, that somebody could be in there doing administrative procedures without this knowing. So, again, there's a whole lot. I just put the top three. I can go on for an hour because I love this stuff, but that's where we are.
Thank you. All right, so item three, the other one's assessing status. So very, very happy to report that John and his team have collected 100% of our $75 million other lines assessment from last year. I think at our last board meeting, we had reported out there was a handful of companies that had either not paid. We had one that bounced their check. You know, things, all of that has been.
But Brian,
which company?
Okay, so I'm happy because I asked the same question as my first company.
In minutes.
And which company? But but that's all been resolved. All the money is in the door, and so we're good to go there.
I think I read somewhere that a couple of companies were questioning the other lines. What's their real issue there?
I think there's just confusion over what's included in other lines. So it's the way it's defined in our statute is it's everything that does not fit within, you know, auto and workers' compensation. So you just kind of literally, there's so many different types of insurance nowadays. They're everything your kitchen sink into that line.
I'm assuming what they're saying is, you know, certain lines are excluded, period, from Guarantee Act coverage. And so what they're saying is we can't just subtract out auto, we can't, and workers' comp, and it's not everything that's left over. We then have to refine it, take out financial guarantee insurance or credit insurance.
Have legislation too that I believe you two have worked on that clarifies, for example, gap insurance, you know, is not covered, by the guarantee.
Warranty business and all.
And Amber Walker, the in-house counsel, has a very well-reasoned opinion as to why it shouldn't be covered under the Act. But to make it absolutely positively clear, that's one of the legislative proposals in the package. What would you say, John?
Tiffany, if I can just add, the thing that we found really interesting this go-round, in the fall of 21, we did an auto assessment, and this was our first other lines assessment. There was a multitude of carriers that called us and said, What is this? We've never seen this. And we said, that's right, because you haven't had an other lines assessment in about 20 years. So then, and clearly there's been a lot of turnover and changes organizational. So a number of people had never seen said bill before. So that's kind of a good thing. But needless to say, there's some aches and pains associated with the collections.
Yeah, absolutely. Just to kind of add to what John said, we'll go to item four. So
If you'll go to attachment B in the board book, there's a couple of different items in here. So I just want to talk through each of these items. So now that $75 million has been collected, you know, we collect for what is known from an insolvency perspective. So when we made that decision, you know, Annette went through five insolvencies in detail there before we're now UPC was unknown. Okay. So as you look at B here, under the other lines assessment, you will see that our cash is going down, okay? UPC also falls into that same assessment. So a pool, I'll call it pool. So while today we won't be talking about any specific assessments, I just want to put that kernel into everybody's ear that we will most likely be looking at another all lines assess, or other lines, excuse me, assessment to cover UPC. So we're not at that point yet. As you can see, we do have adequate cash available to kind of cover this initial, but as Annette learns how much and how many real unearned premium claims we have, how many true claims we have, and in litigation, we will have to put together some forecast on how much we will need in order to cover all of that, but we will not have sufficient funds in the other lines. So I'll just open it up there. There is an additional detail in the notes from our meeting around, you know, how much we're paying out in each line, but auto's in good shape, you know, for comp's in good shape. Other lines is the only one that as we go through UPC, we will need to continue to look at and potentially do another assessment. I'll stop there and just open it up for questions, comments, anything as it regards the current cash flow statements.
So are you thinking that would be in 2023 or?
It depends how fast that all comes in, but potentially, yeah. 2023, probably the latest 2024.
Well, fortunately, we won't have to explain what this is.
Yeah. Yeah. I do think, and well, we know it's by statute how we can assess and all of that. I think carriers will be surprised to get another assessment.
Oh, that's what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Remember, we need to work on communication plans just when we think it's not imminent.
Agreed.
You know.
Absolutely.
Forewarned.
Yes. All right, so we'll move on to item five, which is our fund strategy report. Michael, just say a couple comments and then let John add anything he would like to add to that. Everyone should have the separate binder here. As we all know that for years and years, interest rates were suppressed. It's not like it's been terrible, let's just say, for the last year or so, but you can see that our portfolio is no different than anyone else's portfolio, although we do invest in, by statute, much more conservative options than what your average investor does. But we're not making money like we used to in these funds. But as they mature, and a lot of them are in what I would call shorter term, so 4 years or so approximately maturity, will be replaced with higher return items. So, John, anything you would like to add to that?
No, I think that's great. You will, and the banker in the group probably would note some of the incurred losses that we did have on the portfolio, and obviously those are no similar to what the banking industry has been up to with the UEPs and our need for cash. We've had situations where we had to divest some of those investments that we wanted to hold till maturity and had to take some hits in the marketplace. Obviously, and, you know, to echo Tiffany's comments about the 4-year durations were we're coming up on a turn on a number in the portfolio to attain higher returns.
Any questions on that for John or Okay. All right, so next is our budget variance analysis from fourth quarter. So we turn to tab.
This should be the key.
So a couple of things I just want to point out here. We did have for the entire year an unfavorable budget variance of about 2.1%, which equates to about $132,000. There were a couple of things that were driving that variance. One was salaries. So our salaries were over for the year, and they were very over in December. Part of this was being driven by some PTO that was paid out as employees had separated from the organization. And some of this was driven by a salary coverage that we're all familiar with. This does translate into also FICA, unemployment, employee insurance, all of those things as well. So, the administrative expenses budget, just a little bit of favorability, I do want to point out. We had some education and development. Did well on office rent and overhead, but we're going to talk about that in just a minute for this next year. So I'm just, remember we were better last year. We're going to talk about that. Postage was good, telephone was good, and those types of things. Insurance was a major overage last year. I think we talked about this, I think the last two board meetings, the cyber policy was a big component of that. We do not yet know what will happen with our policy when it comes up for renewal on July 1st. John has reached out to Watkins, who is our broker, just to kind of see where it's at, but we've not heard back yet anything on that. It's still pretty preliminary, but we are hoping that we do not get a significant increase like we did last year. So, but more to come for sure before our next board meeting on that, since it reduced on July 1st. Computer systems, we had a couple of unexpected items. I think everyone has experienced the switch today. So things that...
Gary wanted to do a demo for you. We're just doing a live demo. Sorry.
Yeah, no, you're good. So we had some overage in the computer hardware system space that, honestly, as things begin to age, I think we all know technology is moving so quickly that, we need to be investing in technology and our equipment and there to be able to prepare for future outages, since we have a second switch on order for June. Yes, exactly. Yes. Very much so. So that's really how we ended up the year. We did end up, unfortunately, over budget by about 2.1%. What's that for 2.1%? Any questions on last year's budget variance?
I'll make one comment. Gary's, I'm sure, probably up on this, but I'm negotiating the bank's cybersecurity insurance now. And the one thing that I did to cut it significantly is required multi-factor authentication across the board.
And we actually do have that already installed.
Yes. I mean, that
But you know what, Steve? I want to say I don't know if when we did the last survey questionnaire, if we had it fully implemented yet.
True.
So we'll see if that makes
so
it happen. Absolutely. Yep.
And you probably also observed, Steve, that the surveys that you go through as it relates to cyber, they're a change each and every year.
Yeah, because they learn more.
They learn more, exactly.
They look at their claims and say, We need to put this question
on. And, it's hard to kind of go back and forth with that to see what's really driving our premium, but if you're living what we're living. So.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I think cyber too is a little bit different with your general, is you go through a full underwriting process.
Oh, that's right.
So it's not like your standard insurance lines where everything carries year to year.
And it's and like John says, you can't just take last year's application or underwriting and say, okay, this is the same. It's all changed.
Yeah. All right. So our 2023 operating budget. We have a couple of outstanding items on this. We did approve a budget back in December. So to call everybody's attention to that, it is in your F. It was revised for the motion that we had in December. It is regards a couple of various items. Some of it was around contract labor, salaries, there was a variety. All of that has been incorporated into this here in F. We do still have a couple of items that we do want to make a few motions for. And the first today is our lease. So, the way the lease operates, you know, it's a pass-through, so our taxes went up, the operating expenses have gone up. I think we've all kind of experienced that over the last year with inflation and such. That has resulted in an increase to our annual lease cost of $76,800. So it's not small. So we will want to amend our budget. John did some additional work to go back to our leaseholder and just to find out exactly what was driving this is we had a lot of discussion in our FAC meeting around, are we being allocated for all the unoccupied space? Like who's paying for that? Or is, you know, what exactly is going on? And they did respond and there's copies of those responses in your board book. But no, we are not being allocated for the vacant space, you know, within this complex. It is legitimately $76,800 increase, so it's big. So we will want to complete a motion on that. Additionally, so the board has discussed the pending merit increase for 2023. And John, Shelby, and myself have gone through the salaries and everything a couple of times just to get everything the way that we would like it. And so we do have a motion today on the salaries as well. So just to kind of orient everyone, so in our December board meeting, we approved a 4% merit pool that is paid off of annualized salaries. At that time, not all facts were known about what had occurred in 2022. So there was just some question on the large increase that was showing year over year in the budget proposal. So currently shows 12.6%. Okay, so this is due to the multiple increases last year. So what we would like to do going forward is just break out line one, which is salaries in here, into what is our annual salary expense, and then line 1B would be merit and promotions and the dollar amount associated with that. So that's the 4% that was approved in December. So it's just stating it in a different way so that it's very clear. This is our annual salary expense. This is the amount that is for merit and promotions throughout the year. And so John, Shelby and I last night finalized what the number would be that would be on 1A, which is the salary line. So what I would tell you is to disregard what is in the board book here is we are going to replace it with 1A, assuming approved by motion, at $3,729,161.53. And merit and promotions, there would be a pool of $150,000 to allocate.
150.
And that way it's clear on how much there is from a dollar amount versus the annual salary amount and keeps that in check. You will see those numbers do not necessarily add up to the number that is currently in the board book. It will increase the overage there from 12.6 by a couple of points. So our salary expense for 2023 over 2022 will be increasing. Any discussion on either the lease or salaries?
I do have a question on the lease.
Yes.
So does that increase that? I guess I was thinking that was just for the, a lot of it was from the lease payments themselves. So I was, the rent did not increase. That was all for common area maintenance charges and other expenses. Is that correct?
It's actually a combo, Ty. It's, the lease in of itself has a base rent schedule over the term of the 10 years, which does fluctuate. So that it was already reflected in the budget, but the $76K is the increase in the operating expense that we learned about.
Okay. I'm assuming that our lease allows us the right to audit that, right?
Yes, which is what John went back.
Okay, so we went down, okay.
It wasn't an official audit, but he did go back to talk to them, ask for the breakdown.
Okay,
and,
all right.
And also just understand about, and apologies from the gallery here, but the as it relates to the true-up exercise, there will be a true-up exercise of, you know, the taxes, the utilities, the maintenance, and that we will, they could not yet tell us what the refund, if there will be a refund for 22. Okay. So there could very well be an offset to the increase we're making to the budget based on a return of overpayments. Because again, this is just an estimate.
Gotcha, okay.
So historically, have we had any kind of increase like this before?
Not this big, and in large part, it is property tax. And, you know, we all know what's going on there, but so we have gotten funds back, and I want to say that last year we may have gotten like $30,000 back. So it's promising, but they couldn't confirm anything.
Maybe the legislature will pass tax reform and we'll...
I know! That would be good. Well, there's something called Project Connect that passed in Austin, which is already over budget and it hasn't even kicked off, so that's influenced people's taxes here in Austin.
So, John, question then, the CAM is not as expensed as projected.
Can you repeat
it? The CAM adjustment, or the CAM that is assessed, is as projected, not as expensed.
Correct. Correct. Absolutely.
So we could get a refund.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hopefully. We all keep our fingers crossed for a refund. Any questions on the proposed budget for 2023?
So you're making a motion then?
I will be making two motions.
No questions.
Any questions? Okay. All right. So the first motion is to, I have a bunch of motions, obviously, on my thing here, going to the right one here, but is to authorize John to revise the 2023 budget to include the forecasted office rent and overhead additional fee of $76,800.
Right. A second. We've got a motion.
You're separating those out, right?
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Okay, so we have a motion by Director Reiner, a second by Director Flynn. Is there, or are there any questions or discussion? Hearing none, and all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition or abstention? Hearing none, motion carries unanimously.
All right, so we have a second motion. This motion is to break out the salary line in the budget. So line 1 to 1A and 1B. Line 1A will be for $3,729,161.53. That is the annual salary amount for all employees, including vacant positions. Okay. 1B will be for merit and promotional increases and will be in the amount of $150,000. And then in addition, the $150,000 will be subject to review and approval of the HR committee for the raises given per employee.
All right, we have a motion by Director Reiner. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Director Holt. Do we have any questions, any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition or abstention? The motion carries unanimously.
All right, so that's the end of our formal back agenda. If anyone has any, John, I'm sure for it. John, anything additional to add to it?
I think that was great.
Okay.
Thank you. All right, next we will move on to item number 10, which is public comment. Since there are no members of the public present, we do not need to take up this item. And the last item is item number 11, announcements and adjournment. The one thing I will remind you is we probably may end up having a special board meeting between now and the June board meeting on the RFP, depending on how that develops and the timeline. So stay tuned for that with the original.
And executive director.
No, I think we've taken all the necessary board action at this point, unless things, unless something changes, we would have a special meeting there. Now we need a highly privileged motion to adjourn.
Well, question, are we going to talk about the committee assignments?
That'll be between now and the next meeting.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yeah. We're going to get your training between now and the next
meeting. Yeah, that works.
I make a motion to adjourn.
A second.
So we have a motion by Director Welch. Second by Director Nardecchia to adjourn. And the time is now 1:11 p.m. And the Chief Sega Board of Directors stands adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good meeting.